Off the Ball Breakfast.
We're in a death spiral.
Death BT. TH. Because BT is 40 million, isn't it?
Well, you know.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
The Koigig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
I'm very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome to the Koigig Podcast. Kathleen McNamee here, as always, to bring you all the action from the world of football, both here and across the water in England. And actually going to start in neither place today, because we are joined once more by the lovely Scarlett Heron, who we chatted to last week about your journey over in Scotland, Scarlett. But then you went and you scored your first goal at the weekend.
Yeah, so it was good to get off the mark nice and early. We played Hamilton yesterday away from home and got a pretty comprehensive win. So we're happy with that, 3 points. We've a midweek game now against Glasgow, who have a perfect start so far. The game was rescheduled because both teams were competing in European competitions. So it'll be a big game for us, obviously a big game for them as well. So moving on to this week, it'll be busy again. But yeah, delighted. Got 90 minutes in the belt, so happy with that, and obviously happy to get the goal as well.
It's your first 90 minutes as well, isn't it?
Yeah, yes. First start and played the full 90, so topped off the goal as well, so happy days.
I didn't actually see the goal online. I just saw all the photographs of the celebrations after it. And I don't think I've ever actually seen you look that happy after scoring something. So it feels like it meant a lot to you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And we had a good few corners in the game, so I said I'd have to get my head on one of these at least. So, yeah, no, it was nice, and like all the girls were delighted for me as well. So it was really nice, to be fair, and playing alongside Jess, we both got our first start, so it was nice as well to do it alongside her. So,
well, congratulations. Long may it continue so that we have something to talk about at the start of the podcast for the rest of the season. And then I suppose we should definitely touch on the action at home this week, because we are very much on the final stretch now, Karen, and it looks like we're pretty close to deciding who has it, or basically there.
Yeah, I think we'll know probably, I would say, Wednesday. I can't see Athlone not wrapping it up this week after their 2-1 win against Shells. Obviously 2-1, there wasn't much in it, the same way there has been throughout the league, but Athlone have managed to keep, for the most part, a lot of players very fit the whole time, whereas Shells were lost. They've had some decent injuries that have kind of set them back a little bit, especially Kate Mooney. She was on fire at the start of the year, and you're kind of comparing and contrasting her to Kelly Brady, who's continued her good run of goal scoring form. So those little things in a league that's this tight really do make all the difference. And yeah, Athlone, they're just solid all round, really, really solid team, and deserving winners of the league again.
Scarlett, would this have been how you would have seen the season going at the start of the year?
Yeah, I think Athlone have been the strongest team throughout the entire season. I think their defensive record is brilliant. I don't know, it's very few goals.
9 goals or something like that, I think.
Yeah, so really, really impressive. And then when you have such a strong attacking line as well, and such a strong midfield driving you on, I mean, the strength and depth in that squad only kind of grew as the season went on. You had the likes of Kate Slevin coming back from playing inter-county football of Galway, and like she started the last few games. And when you have someone like that coming in mid-season to start as well, it's really, really important for them to go forward. And as Karen said, they've been lucky with injuries. Like, even though they've gone through a tough European campaign, that they still have everyone fit, and they haven't really, Izzy Groves is maybe the only player that has been in and out through injury. So yeah, obviously with the bit of managerial confusion a few weeks ago, they've done really well to steady the ship and to get through the last few games. And obviously the win at Tulka Park on Saturday was the biggest win of them all, I'd say.
Yeah, and as you guys said, like the battles that we've seen these two teams had, not even just this season, but over recent seasons, they've always been good games by and large. Well, I suppose you probably skip one or two in there, but by and large they have been pretty tight between the two of them. Means his first season in a good few years that Shells would end a season trophy-less, isn't it? Like 22-23 was the last time. Mm-hmm. So a difficult one for them, but as you've both said there, they've really suffered with injuries, which definitely hasn't helped. The weather probably didn't help on Saturday as well. It was fairly stormy in the morning and then it did clear a little bit for them, but wasn't ideal conditions on the pitch. Karen, you guys have an extra game, don't you? Because is it Bowes or something? You have an extra game from like round 10 of the fixtures?
It's actually just been rescheduled to be the last game of the season. So that's all going to run in line. Athlone have their extra game this week, which means they can win it before we play them on Saturday, which is on TG Cahir. So potentially...
They have confirmed that fixture that you will have to play on television.
They have, yeah, but I actually don't think I'll be there because you say people coming back from GAA, a lot of us are in club GAA season as well, and it started to impact us probably more than it would in other years where we'd be competing and there'd be a decision to be made. But look, that's the joys of amateur sport and multi-sports, and that's a realistic thing that clubs have to deal with, you know, as the status of the league is still amateur. We're not alone in that. Athlone and Shells are probably two of the teams that mostly don't have to contest with that kind of thing. You know, they've a few Americans have got other people that are solely focused on that, and again, maybe that's a reason that some of them, particularly around Athlone, they're a little bit more full-time than the rest. And look, that's just the reality of the league, and Athlone have put their money where their mouth is, and it's yielding results, so fair play to them.
Do you think that it'll help encourage other teams, like say the likes of Shells, maybe now that are going toe-to-toe with them over multiple seasons, to put a little bit more funding in behind the team?
It's very difficult. I mean, you're dependent on how your men's team is getting on and how much like money is in the kitty there as well, and where the focus is. Is it getting Shells back up to the top in the men's league, or is it putting more into the women? And you are kind of beholden to the club, and it's not like we're going to get a huge amount of outside help. We spoke about the 23s next year and where that funding is and where funding would be better spent, and it's a bigger conversation, I suppose. But look, in an ideal world, yeah, obviously more money would be pumped in by clubs, but I think a lot of clubs are already at the pin of their collar finance wise as well. So yeah, it's really, it depends on the board. It depends on a lot of things.
We'll wait and see. After us saying that last week, literally just as we finished recording the podcast last week, it was announced that the FAI were actually going in front of the Oireachtas committee. We didn't really learn anything from it, to be perfectly honest. Eileen Gleeson was asked not to attend by the FAI, so she didn't, so we didn't hear anything on her side, and feels like something that is going to rumble on for a little bit longer. But one of the things that it has stirred up is more calls from a lot of people within football for more government funding for the game itself across the country. So
we saw a lot of that as kind of backlash for the NFL, didn't we, as well?
That
using that as a way to have a dig as well.
Yeah, it probably couldn't have come at a worse time for the government. Now, I think with the NFL, it was something like close to 10 million that they put in, and they reckon they'd get about 64 million back. And anyone who spent any time in Dublin over the last couple of days would probably see that quite clearly just by the sheer amount of them everywhere. I went into town yesterday during the game because I figured there wouldn't be that many people about, and it was so nice. It was so peaceful. It was so calm. There wasn't people shouting "Go Steelers" at me or "Go Vikings" or whatever. I know, to be fair, like all the tourists were lovely and stuff. There was just a lot of them, and it was nice to feel like the city was back for a little bit. But yeah, I think that those conversations when you're comparing sports are always difficult because those Americans coming in are going to spend massive.
They're not like with like. You're clutching, I think, a little bit there. They're very separate conversations that all need to have. There's no point in saying more money than us. They're all very, very different.
Yeah, you're always going to get like that massive influx.
Are you going to be driven to hand over a load of cash to something that's not yielding much in return? If we look at what the men's team are doing with the women's team, where we are bringing in crowds, stuff like that, is it worth their investment? It's remains to be seen. Again, big, big conversation, but
yeah,
nothing to do with the poor NFL fans.
No, and we're definitely not cash. Yeah, I was saying you would hate to have been a bottle of whiskey in Dublin this week. It's like that and a half pint of Guinness and a bottle of whiskey. Those were the two dangerous ones that I saw a lot of around the place. Okay, let's take a look at what happened in England over the weekend in the WSL, even though I would rather not, if possible. Between Arsenal men and women, I both love and hate last minute goals, but we'll go to Arsenal first since it was the first game of the weekend. They obviously got Aston Villa. The game was at the Emirates, as all the Arsenal games are this season, and Manum got that goal in the first half and it looked like they were going to hold on. And then Lucy Parker popped up in the 94th minute, which actually is weirdly enough the exact same time as the Gabrielle goal came yesterday for the men. Yeah, I'm going to let you guys take this one because I honestly don't know what to say. It's so frustrating. It's a sort of game that they need to be seeing out if they want to be competing for the top places. And now they've just given all the other teams, including United, a bit more of a foothold in the league than they have.
It's such a pity, but it's the sort of game where we will say, as we have in other seasons, that this is the difference between them and Chelsea, the ruthlessness. And they're feeding us the easy out of having to analyse it, just not being ruthless enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's...
Now, they didn't take... They didn't have a huge amount of shots on target, and Aston Villa also did have quite a few shots. But in terms of possession, like, Arsenal completely dominated. So they have to just put the foot in the throat a bit more when you have the likes of, you know, the players, the firepower that they have. Olivia Smith, get her in 1v1s down the wing, get the crosses into the box, get numbers in. They can afford to take risks a bit more, I think.
Yeah, but it's also the fact that like the goal did come from a Villa mistake, and it just didn't look like at any stage really that Arsenal were putting their like foot on Aston Villa's throats and saying we're going for this, we know we can hammer 2-3 more past you. Scarlett, I don't know how you felt about the game.
Yeah, I think that Arsenal should have gone for it a bit more. Obviously, like, getting an early goal, this took the foot off the gas, and Villa weren't good. Like, Villa didn't put out much of a display in the first half, and then second half they come out kind of all guns blazing, ready for a bit of bite in them as well to try go at Arsenal. Defended really well, but there wasn't really too many opportunities that Arsenal should have done better with. Like, they didn't create much. I think with a team like Villa who are yet to win this year, you really need to put those games to bed early. And you've seen that Chelsea did that this weekend, getting three really quick goals and just killing it straight away. And when the first goal goes in, when Manum scores, you think that's going to happen here, but it just didn't. And the way it goes on for a second goal, and it just never comes. And then when you leave it that late, you're always leaving yourself open to conceding a late equaliser. And to be fair to Villa, like, Lucy Parker comes on, gets the goal, and they're well deserved of a draw in that game. And I was looking even at their next fixtures, like, they've had a tough enough start, but they've West Ham, Leicester and Everton the next three games. So I think for Villa after that, like, they'll be high in confidence, probably looking at targeting those three games, probably looking at maybe two wins if you can, maybe 4.6 points out of those next three. And they're looking okay for the start of the season, but before this I thought they're a bit hopeless, but I think that goal's kind of maybe giving them a new lease of life.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, I think at times they've played really good football, Villa, so far this season, but they were letting themselves down defensively. And now that they've seen that they can do that against Arsenal, they need to be consistent there and carry that through. Because they did play some good stuff. But Arsenal, Villa had three chances within extra time, like three very good chances. Van Domstar made the save from the free kick. There was another chance, I can't remember. And then the set piece as well, which they conceded from. Like, that they really allowed Aston Villa to come into the game, and to be coughing up three chances in extra time, like, something had to give. So yeah, fair play to Villa for sticking at it. They were under pressure in terms of getting run ragged possession wise, but again, it's just getting the right combinations of the right people on the pitch for Arsenal that can spark something in the final third when they need to show that grit, because they're all really, really good players, and they played some lovely football, but like you say, it's just real cutting edge goal scoring opportunities and having that bit of bullishness. You don't want to be questioning that this early in the season. Maybe it was just one of those games. Maybe they just had a bit of a lull. But yeah, disappointing from an Arsenal point of view when your main rivals are not taking any foot off the gas by the looks of it.
Well, you kind of have to question it this early in the season as well, because it now means that they've dropped 4 points in the opening four rounds. Chelsea only dropped 6 last year overall. And I think it's interesting you say there about getting the right combinations of the right people on the pitch, because I don't fully know if Rene Sleggers knows what that is yet, in a mixture of, I don't think there is actually a full starting 11 there that's kind of nailed on. No one has injuries. I think there's very good options for the first time in a while for the for an Arsenal team to have different types of play, but I don't think she's fully worked out who the combos are to play against certain teams, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Like, we were used to seeing Mead coming in from the right yesterday, or Saturday it was more so from the left, so it's a different combination with your fullbacks. Smith's coming in from the right. She had scored a goal from the left in a previous game with the banger where she cut in. Then obviously you always have, what's her name, coming off the bench as well, the Australian girl. She Ford. Always comes in from the left, yeah, as well. And then Blackstinius, when Blackstinius comes on, you've got Russo pulling back. Maybe there's too much change, you're right. And I know you have to keep people happy, and we always talk about Chelsea's squad depth. But before you can get to that point, you have to be winners, I think. And it's not about keeping everyone happy. It's just about winning. So that might mean they need to be more consistent up there to get those partnerships firing.
One thing I did actually forgot to mention earlier when we were talking about the NFL was the fact that Kane McCabe was one of the official mascots for it at the weekend, which I thought was quite funny. Her, Bundiaki, and Hannah Tyrrell. I was just like, what's that conversation like between those three people? Like, so random. But her and Caitlin Ford were pitch side at the game yesterday. So her week didn't end too badly.
That's a good life.
So long as she was a Steelers fan. Okay, let's look at Manchester City and London City Lionesses. A pretty routine victory for them, considering what we've seen from London City thus far. I know last week we were kind of saying that maybe it was a start of something against Everton, but I would think that looking at who London City have played before that, this is a result that you probably could have guessed easily enough.
Yeah, like London City are given a little bit of the Crystal Palace vibes, where they're trying to play the same football, or trying to play too much football, and not really knowing their place. They do need to bank up and not be playing out. They were very much caught a little bit flat-footed in midfield. I thought that Clinton was really, really good for City. Yeah, they were just a little bit off it in midfield, and Man City were happy to punish it. I do think they will pick up points against teams that they can play football against. I think they have a lot going for them going forward, but games where they're under pressure defensively, I think that they need to do something about that if they're going to, well, firstly, survive. I think they will survive. I don't know what I'm basing that on, because they're conceding a lot of goals. But,
well, there are other people that are worse than them in the league at the moment.
Not to say that they're doing brilliantly, but I think they do have a bit about them. And obviously, yesterday we saw the debut of Gioro, I guess. So, you know, there's elements that can excite them there. A little bit unlucky with the penalty. I thought that really kind of killed the game off. I don't think the girl can move her arm, but they gave away two penalties again in this match. They have definitely given up another two. I think Fernanda had given away two. She was dropped today, so other people...
Discipline has not been their friend.
Yeah, so that's an easy thing to address. You know, that's four goals that could be wiped out really, really quickly, and they're the lessons they need to learn pretty quickly. But yeah, Man City were good. I mean, Man City did what they had to do.
Bunny Shaw back on it from the spot after missing the penalty earlier in the month as well. Scarlett, I mean, whenever she's in top form, she is such a pleasure to watch play. And it potentially she hasn't just quite found that exact form yet this season, but also there has been so many changes within City that's potentially not all that surprising.
And you could see the frustration. She had a really good chance before the first penalty. She just sort of dragged to the right of the goal, and you can kind of see the frustration on her face, and you're thinking this is going to be another sort of drought for her. But to be fair, tucked away the two penalties, same side both times, so I'd say she'd be happy enough just to sort of get off the mark in that game. And as you said, yeah, without Hemp in the team, you know, you're missing sort of your playmaker to Shaw's ruthlessness. So I'd say she'd be happy enough with the two goals. But to be fair, I thought London City stayed in the game. I mean, it was a cheap goal to give away for Nikita Paris, but I thought after that they did quite well. They had a few chances, and if it goes 2-2, you know, it's a different game. But it was one of those that I think City were always going to pull away with. But yeah, I wouldn't write London City off just yet. I think you're right, Karen, in saying that they will pick up points in places, but even like pressing City really high and then they just get
Yeah, it's a bit
clipped
naive, isn't
over
it?
into midfield. I think against a team like that, you just kind of need to bank up and maybe try set traps out wide instead of going like they pressed with two pressing the two centre halves, locked on the two full backs, and then they're just getting clipped over into midfield, the spare player. So I think if they need to be a bit more sort of compact and harder to break down. But I think once they sort of adapt and maybe learn a few lessons, then they should be okay.
Yeah, and like you said, Kathleen, they're lucky that other teams around them are dropping more points than they are, because
Well, you have both
they're
Liverpool
learning
and
how
West
good
Ham
they
that don't have any points, and we know so much in this league how when you're fighting relegation, like one win somewhere along the season is so important, and then whatever draws or whatever it is that you can pick up.
Yeah, they've shown enough for me in matches that I would be putting them ahead of the likes of West Ham at the moment, even though the scoreline obviously at the weekend doesn't reflect that. So then, yeah, Man City, obviously their tails are up going into the Arsenal game, and Arsenal to have that sucker punch of a last minute concession and drop below City in the table. I think yeah, it'd be interesting how Slegger is going to really have to manage that this week and get Arsenal really, really fired for that Man City game, because it's huge for them. It's huge. It's a huge game this early in the season.
Oh yeah, like I say, don't win against Man City, they're not going to win the league, basically. That's,
Yeah.
you know, I
That's the
don't think.
reality of it when it's that many teams in the league. You know, you only get a few chances, and teams don't tend to slip up. Your Chelsea's don't tend to slip up.
Yeah, and it is funny because of like barring the weekend, I suppose, if you were to look at Arsenal's form this season, I wouldn't have necessarily said that it's been absolutely terrible either, but also they're a point behind Spurs. Which, when you think of the defeat that Spurs took against City and how heavily a hammering that was, now obviously they did get a good win this weekend over Leicester. I don't know what it was this weekend with like just rakes of goals going in very, very tightly together. But like obviously as an Arsenal fan, and considering Spurs were a team that a couple of years ago they were slamming like 10 goals past easily enough, it shows. Great growth for the league or whatever, but also not a position that you want to be in as an Arsenal fan. We'll look at that Spurs game next against Leicester. So that was a 2-1 win for them, two goals in fairly quick succession. And Leicester, like I don't think Leicester were bad necessarily in this. Like they did rally a bit in the end. It was more of the Spurs that we had seen prior to that City game.
I actually thought Leicester should have had a penalty early on, and none of them really appealed it. Jed Spence came through the back of one of the players, and no one really looked for it at all. No one appealed it, and I just thought, like in a game like that, to go sort of, especially to go 1-0 up at home and to get the crowd sort of behind you, I just it would have been so such an important turn of events in the game and how the game panned out. You just look back to that and think, like a team like Leicester need to be able to, you know, scrap out goals when they can, and I just thought that was an opportunity wasted. Like it was weird that no one reacted to it, and I probably would have been soft, but it's one of those where you kind of see them given. But I just thought there wasn't much of an appeal. For Spurs though, the first goal really poor defending. Like Tandberg takes a poor second touch and it gets away from her, but somehow she manages to sort of toe poke it into the corner, and Leicester are just kind of flat footed in defence and don't really react to it. And Sarah Tierney obviously gets one back when they're 2-0 down, and she was probably the outstanding player in Leicester's midfield. Kind of tucked the game by the scruff of the neck and was desperately trying to get them back into the game, and she was kind of out on her own at times trying to create different opportunities for them. So yeah, I thought Spurs were probably well worth the win. I thought Olivia Holt was really good, obviously getting her goal and then having these driving runs into midfield as well. Really, really positive player, really good play. And then, yeah, so I thought good win for Spurs, obviously starting the season really, really strongly. And for Leicester, it's a tough defeat, probably a game that they could have got something out of in the end.
Yeah, and I think the Spurs manager, Ho, after, he was even saying that they can play a lot better, and but he, you know, that's something that Spurs wouldn't have done in previous years. A game where they haven't played at their best, they definitely wouldn't have won. You know, they were that kind of inconsistent team. So, yeah, I think he'll certainly take positives from that. And like you say, if you're sitting above Arsenal after four games as a Spurs fan or as a Spurs player or anyone, you're pretty happy with that. So I know these are the teams, again, they need to be winning if they want to start making strides. But looks like they've started to do that, and looks like they have a pretty solid manager behind them as well.
Yeah, and seems to know very much what he wants from the team and how he wants to play, which I don't think we have seen from Spurs teams of late. And that's generally why you feel like they start to drift off a little bit in the latter stages of the season. A team who definitely do not know what they are at this season is Gareth Taylor's Liverpool. And I thought some of the comments from him were kind of interesting after the game, saying that, you know, everyone wants to try and play a possession-based team, but it doesn't happen overnight. Some of it you have to give United a little bit of credit for in the way they pressed, but we need to be better, definitely. There are learnings for sure. The signs have been positive so far, but we've got a lot of work to do. I don't know what positive signs he's talking about there, or the fact that United should only get a little bit of credit in this, but... Yeah.
Oh, I thought Liverpool were so flat in the first half. I thought Man United, like, you'd be a little bit worried that Man United only scored two in that first half, given that at stages when Man United won the ball back and they were putting crosses into the back, there was two defenders to three Man United attackers. So he's talking about styles of football, but the very, very basics of defending and the gaps between the lines, I thought were very, very obvious. So they're another team now that you're saying get back to basics, because I haven't seen signs at the start of the season from Liverpool that there's something to come from them. Despite having some very good players, you know, they do have some very good players, and they had a couple of chances, you know, only for Tullis Joyce made a great save in the second half. It could have changed the kind of complexion of things. Liverpool started coming at them. But other than that, I think, yeah, it just felt a little bit flat from Liverpool. I don't know where the spark's going to come from.
Charlotte, do you have any idea of where Liverpool can change things up? Is it a case of it's not going to happen until they get another transfer window and maybe bring in some signings?
Yeah, I mean, obviously losing Olivia Smith was huge. Like, she was without a doubt their most outstanding player last season. And yeah, they made five changes to their last league game. So it's not as if they have, I suppose he's trying to do different things, but I don't know what that idea is. And
yeah, you're changing your back line though as well. Like, you don't want to be changing your back line. That's
the keeper as well.
Yeah.
I trying to do something different, I suppose, but it just didn't come off at all. And yeah, I think United will probably be frustrated with how little chances they probably took. And obviously Terlin's probably going to be pulling her hair out. She had a handful of chances that she just didn't put away. Second goal is just really, really poor from Liverpool. Like, it just sums up their first half. You know, if you get in 1-0 at half time, you're going, right, we got away with one there. We need to go out and show what we're about in the second half. But just to concede that right before the break is just, it's criminal. Like, just the easiest goal Toon's going to get. And yeah, just
our
really
goals
really
right before the break got to be our number one complaint this season. I feel like every podcast we've done so far, we've been like, it's just a terrible worse. Time.
There is nothing worse though, because it just could change it, especially for managers as well. It changes the whole complexion of their team talk. They might have to completely change how they approach the second half. It's a cliche, but it is a terrible time to concede, just before or just after. But you're talking about Liverpool bringing players in. Like, Man United have five players on the bench yesterday. Now, they're good players. They're probably of a decent caliber. But like that couple of injuries, it really can knock a team like United. So they're not the Liverpool aren't the only team who will need to bring in a few contingency players in January. Whether that will happen or not remains to be seen. The fact that they're playing well and winning might paper over that crack, but we shall see.
Depends on how much money they have to pay Ruben Amorim and how much money they have to pay Gareth Southgate to get him to come in.
I felt like Ruben Amorim said that he'd walk away, didn't he? But they all, yeah. You don't know how true that would be.
Well, I think, isn't it? If they get
the women
to
won't see that money anyway. Like, let's be realistic. I'm not sure that Ineos know that there is a women's team. But
well, I think if they get him to, like, November, is it? It's like 10 million rather than 16 million buyout or something. So, you know, imagine what you could do with 6 million in the women's game. You'd be happy as Larry. Okay, let us look at Brighton's very small win over Everton. Aguiman was the star player in this one. She got player of the game after scoring that goal. But disappointment for Everton again. They're not having a great couple of weeks of it.
No, and I haven't been paying attention. Is Courtney Brosnan injured? That's my main concern for Everton. That's my weekly Courtney watch is what I look for when I see Everton. And obviously she wasn't in the squad, so don't know what the update is there.
Yeah, I tried to look it up earlier and I haven't actually seen anything about it one way or the other. So I don't know. Now, there was a point last season where... No, you go ahead.
Sorry, I just seen that on like one of the flash score apps, it came up as a knee injury. So I'm not sure like how accurate that is, but that's the only thing I've saw.
Yeah.
Well, we won't panic yet, but Everton and Ireland need her. Yeah, like you say, Everton not on a good run of things. Brighton probably should have scored more in that first half of the game as well. Like, they enticed Everton into the game a little bit, but they weren't clinical. But Brighton, I thought, were definitely the better side there. And Aguiman, she's been dying for that goal. You know, so much hype around her during the summer. So I was delighted for her to get on the score sheet and get that attention. And hopefully it's a sign of things to come for her.
Yeah, I'm just looking here that Everton have signed an emergency goalkeeper because of Courtney's injury, which doesn't maybe bode the best.
Is it a week long one though?
Oh, maybe it is. It doesn't actually say. It just says that they've signed Manchester City goalkeeper Katie Startup on an emergency loan, go straight into the squad for the game on Sunday yesterday. And it just says she provides cover for the injured Courtney Brosnan, but doesn't actually say anywhere what the injury is or what the prognosis is. So we will just have to keep our fingers crossed that it is actually nothing too bad.
Yep.
It has been confirmed as a knee injury, but no timeline on return. We won't think about that one for what, another 3 weeks-ish?
3 weeks.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay, and then finally for the weekend, we have the Chelsea game where they managed to do what Chelsea do. We had a red card in that game. A very bizarre decision. It was a bit like the Liverpool red card and the taking off of the shirt to celebrate. I was just like, you know instinctively if you pull someone's hair, you're going to get sent off, you know.
Originally, I don't think she meant to pull the hair, but then once she had a hold of it, she was like...
She's like, I'm not letting go.
I'll just give it... I was like, stop. Yeah, when your team is already 3-0 down against the champions, that is a rush of blood to the head. Not what West Ham needed by any means. It could have been a lot worse for West Ham than it was. I know we started the season talking about how good Aggie Beaver-Jones is in the box, and then she stuck free kick in from 40 yards. So for me, yeah, she's been the standout player the first four rounds and the driving force behind Chelsea. But they didn't need much help with a poor West Ham side. Very poor.
Yeah, Scarlett, is there any hope for West Ham this season? We've seen very little from them. Obviously, alongside Liverpool, they are on 0 points at the bottom of the table, and I think their goal difference has them on the very, very bottom below Liverpool.
Yeah, and I've seen Martinez didn't start, which I thought she was one of their standouts last year. Very defensive team to start, which is fair enough given the opposition. And then I just think when you're struggling that much, they didn't make a sub until the last 12 minutes of the game, and Chelsea just completely rotated on 60 minutes. So it just shows the sort of the differences in the bench. I don't know if Ryan Skinner lacks trust in the players on the bench to come on and try and make a difference, but when you're 3-0 down, are you just trying to close up shop and just try keep the pride in the result and try not make it too bad? Or I suppose you could go on and try something different, but then you run the risk of losing 6 or 7-0, which easily could have happened. So yeah, really disappointing for West Ham. Not really surprising to anyone, I don't think, the scoreline, given the way that Chelsea played in the opening 20 minutes, and as we said, just completely ruthless, put the game to bed early. And yeah, they had a few chances in the second half. Asahi had a good chance. Hannah Hampton made kind of a slap save, and that was kind of it. Very little spark from that West Ham side, and you would really, really worry about them going into the next round now.
Definitely not looking good for them over the next couple of weeks. They've really been struggling, and does feel like a bit of a race to the bottom between themselves and Liverpool as to who can get their act together a bit quicker. That's all the games for this weekend. Next weekend, some very exciting fixtures when it comes to top of, well, I don't know if I can count Arsenal on top of the table, but potential top of the table. We've got Man United at home to Chelsea, and then Arsenal travelling to City. So we may have a bit of an idea by the time that rolls around, what the rest of the season is going to look like. So that'll be good. Karen and Scarlett, thank you very much, as always. The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, official snack partner to the Republic of Ireland women's national team. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you all again next week.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball, in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.